This episode of the Police One podcast is sponsored by Officer Store. Learn more about getting the gear you need at prices you can afford by visiting officerstore.com. Hey, welcome back. You're listening to Policing Matters on policeone.com. I'm your host, Jim Dudley. Well, law enforcement officers risk their lives every day, and some injuries call for time off, rehabilitation, or even surgery. Others may be severe and call for care and support. And my guest today is Dr. Patricia K. Reyna, whose husband, Umberto Reyna, a North Carolina State Highway Patrol Master Trooper, suffered severe brain trauma from being rear-ended on the interstate while he was investigating a collision in 2009. Trooper Reyna has required 24/7 care and supervision since the time of his injury. Dr. K. Reyna currently works for the Center on Brain Injury Research and Training, CBRT, at the University of Oregon. Her doctoral thesis and research looked at increasing TBI knowledge, self-efficacy, and hope among caregivers of law enforcement officers, firefighters, veterans, and others with TBI. Well, welcome to Policing Matters, Dr. K. Reyna.
Thank you so much for having me.
Yeah, so I've read about your family and the incident. I hate bringing it up, but I think it's a basis for what we're talking about today. Can you tell us what happened on that day?
Absolutely. So my husband and I were high school sweethearts. I have known him my whole life, basically. And our lives are going great, right? And so he became a North Carolina State Highway Patrol Master Trooper. He was about 8 years in at the time, and he was investigating a collision on the interstate. He was way off on the grass. There were four lanes, the on-ramp and everything. And someone came across all four lanes, across the on-ramp, out into the grass and rear-ended him at 75 miles an hour. It hit just enough, a little bit on one side, just enough, though it was like an accordion. It put the entire trunk, it just accordioned the back trunk, the trunk into the back seat. But it just hit enough on the driver's side, just a little, that it spun him back out into traffic. So he ended up with a huge impact and then a spin. And that is what the doctors say that actually caused the traumatic brain injury, was both of those things happening at the same time.
And so how was the transition from active law enforcement? He was an athlete. I've read about him. He was a runner and golfer and involved in so many other physical activities. Now you came to a grinding halt. What was that kind of impact on him and your family?
Absolutely. I mean, you know, with these injuries that happen just in a blink of an eye, your life changes in an instant. I often say we fell off the planet. It was really hard. I mean, we had a fantastic life together, did everything together. And once he was injured, I had no idea what I was getting into. I didn't know anything about brain injury, nothing at all when this started. So when they sent him home with me like 3 days later, he wasn't able to get rehab because they didn't approve it. It took me about 13 months to get him into rehab and to a brain injury doctor to actually get some care lined up for him. But so he got sent home with the family, and the man that left that morning didn't come home with us. I found out later, he has dementia, cognitive deficits, super sensitive hearing, super sensitive smell. He didn't like to be touched when he came home. He was sitting in the dark. Nobody could get near him. He wasn't talking. He had a very flat effect. And it was just like night and day. He had a complete personality change, obsessive compulsive disorder. I mean, you name it, he's had it. And it was a real big struggle from this very strong man who loved his job and loved serving the citizens of North Carolina. He just loved that job. In fact, that morning he went in early. He usually was a night shift. And that morning he heard that call come in. He was going to work that morning shift, but he was usually night shifts. But he actually went in early and let the other trooper go home because he knew he'd been up all night. And he just went in a few minutes early when he heard the call come in. And so he went over there and then this happened. And what does it do? Well, it changes your life in an instant. And as far as the kids, we had one that was just, he was valedictorian, and he had just started a college. And then we had our daughter was 5 days away from being 16, and then a younger daughter that was 12. And I had to say, okay, son, you're on your own. Okay, middle daughter, you take care of the little one. And like, I was like full time, absolutely had to take care of their dad. And it was like unbelievable. The kids couldn't even touch him. I couldn't touch him. And it was really hard because we didn't have any supports and I couldn't get care. So it was like a big fight for his care for about 5 years.
And from your so from the law enforcement agency, from the troopers, what kind of support did you get? Friends, coworkers, leadership there, what kind of support did they offer for you?
Well, when he was first injured, we had a couple of people that came to the hospital the first day. I couldn't even tell you who they were, to be honest with you, at that time. But after that, they actually nobody. In fact, they don't speak to us today. And what happens is, I think with when they get into these systems and it's a catastrophic injury. And remember, this is 14 years ago. This happened 14 years ago. Where this was in 2009. There wasn't anything in the country. There were no nonprofits in the country that helped injured officers at that time. I know we have some grassroots efforts that are coming up and some organizations that are a few years old now. Thank God they're coming through. But at that time, we didn't have support. And what I found out was that he had to be dead in order to get supports from the nonprofits that were out there. I called up for about 4 years to everything I could imagine to call up to. And they would say, no, we only support our the ones who've given the ultimate sacrifice. And let me just say they need those supports 100% and more than what they get. But I found out that there was nothing in the country for a catastrophically injured, which was a complete shock to me. And in fact, every time I say that to anybody today, they can't believe it. It's just unbelievable. And then I got called in when I was, I wrote the governor for help too, because I'm thinking we couldn't get through workers' compensation. Workers' compensation is a real nightmare experience. And it actually took me about 5.5 years and going to the media to get his care set up. But the Highway Patrol actually called me in after I wrote the governor's office and said, look, you married him for better or for worse. And he's not going to get this what the doctors have ordered. And then workers' comp would call me at home and say, after they finally got him into the hospital and they said he needed, A through Z, he's going to need this for the rest of his life and he's going to need these services. I went home thinking that he was going to get those services, but I got a phone call from workers' comp that said, no, we're not going to give him those services. We're not going to take care of him for the rest of his life. And we expect you to leave him home alone and go back to work. And this man could not be left home alone. He today re still requires 24/7 care. And I was devastated. I have to tell you, that was probably the worst day of my life. It wasn't, I mean, look, the accident happened. We can't do anything about it. But what we can do is change how we handle these afterwards. We can make sure they have departmental support ongoing. And I'm not really, I just want to say, I love law enforcement. So don't anybody listen to this take anything that I say against law enforcement. I love law enforcement. My husband would be out there today if he could be. But I just think that we need to work harder. And perhaps their hands are tied behind the scenes and they can only do so much when these things happen. But I think that we do need and we can. There is a lot of room for improvement in this area and that we can most definitely, my idea is, the goal of my heart is to pave the way for other injured officers that are coming behind us because we know that this is a very dangerous profession and there are more coming. And so, what can we do to make sure they're taken care of?
Yeah, 100%. And like you said, we have so many support groups now, federal, state, local. We have a great chaplaincy around the country, and people like yourselves, spouses and families of law enforcement officers who provide help and training and support. And so you are left with three kids and this debilitated husband, and you're a housewife or a stay-at-home mom. You're not a trained RN or any other kind of healthcare professional. What did you do?
Right. Well, I was actually working in finance accounting. This was not my industry, right? I had no idea if you told me this 14 years ago that I'd be, I have my doctorate degree and be doing this type of research. I would never believe it. But when I discovered there was no help for them, and I also used I just want to say I love online education because here I had a husband that I have 24/7. I didn't have my degrees yet. I had put my husband through college. We were high school sweethearts. Only one of us could go. So he went first. And so I was raising the kids, but that was back at work in this finance accounting type work. And so I started with my BA and I obtained my BA in like 13 months. I went to two colleges, transferred everything in, took like 8-10 classes at the time, and just boom, I had my BA. And I have to say it was therapy. And I was that crazy. I actually needed all of that therapy. It is so hard on the family. It kept my mind engaged with something beyond my problems. At that point, I obtained my master's, and then I enrolled in my second master's and my doctorate program at the same time. And I finished my second master's and then finished my doctorate. Now, the reason why I did the research is because I found out in the United States, we don't have any research on injured law enforcement officers, and we don't have any research on their caregivers. I'm kind of like astonished that we don't have that. You know, other countries are ahead of us in this area. And so my thought was, no, we have to do something about this. We can do better and I can do better. So it took me like 13 years from the time he was injured to get to the point to have my doctorate. But I just kept in mind in my heart that I wanted to help other people. This wasn't just about us. I knew this was happening to other people. So I wanted to do whatever I could do to make sure that our experience is not replicated, that we could change this experience for other people. I truly believe that. And though we have systems that are hard to change, we are creative people. I truly believe the American people are creative. We are creators, and we can create new systems of care and supports, even if the old ones don't change fast enough. We have the opportunity to do something to help our injured. So that's what I did. I went back to school, I obtained my education, and then I just kind of hit it hard on research. I was lucky enough that I was randomly assigned, and I don't think it was random. I believe it was a God thing, to a doctoral chair that actually worked at the Center on Brain Injury Research and Training. Okay, that's no coincidence. I had no idea who we would get as randomly assigned. And so Dr. Melissa McCart is the director of CBERT, and that's where I work now. And so I've just been blessed to be able to work there as a researcher. And actually, there was no funding in the country for this research. So I went around to my family members and said, hey, we just got to get this research. I'm going, would you donate some money? And so my family donated enough money to start the research for me to work one day a week at CBERT. So I'm just thrilled to be able to actually finally, after all these years, because let me just say, with brain injury, it doesn't stop. It is a constant. It's hard. Okay, it's really hard. I was on the phone with my youngest daughter this morning, and we even shed tears over it, of what happened 14 years ago. It is an ongoing process of helping them rebuild. And I believe that if our officers live, we need to help them rebuild a new life with purpose and hope. And I don't care how much help they need to do that.
Yeah, absolutely. So you went, you did your research on traumatic brain injury. You're set up at the Institute in Oregon. And so you're finding out more about not only the causes, but the manifestations and then what's left after that. I want to ask you about rehabilitation efforts and mm-hmm. progress, if mm-hmm. that's such a thing. But first, let's take a moment and thank our sponsor. Officer Store, equipping protectors with passion. That's how we operate, and it's how we live. We understand that having the right gear can mean the difference between life and death. Our goal is to get you the gear you need, when you need it, at prices you can afford. Visit us at officerstore.com. And we're back, and I'm speaking with Dr. Kay Reyna on traumatic brain injury. She is a researcher and a caregiver. And you've suffered that trauma of your husband, the trooper, being injured in this horrific collision, ended up with TBI, the traumatic brain injury. Did you find support once you started the study? Did that study link you into others who were doing anything similar to what you were doing?
Not yet, because actually this study is the first of its kind in the country. This is groundbreaking research. No one else in the country is documenting the lived experiences of our injured law enforcement officers, which is what the study I'm doing right now, to document the lived experiences of our officers and through the lens of their caregivers, because laying that foundation is really important to be able to then develop the interventions and supports. But what I did find afterwards, and I want to say, like I said, I called all the law enforcement organizations first, and I scoured the internet, and I couldn't find anybody that would take him, because my husband was literally standing against the wall. And I said to his doctors, what in the world am I going to do? What are we going to do for the rest of our lives? And he said, well, he's going to do what he did before. And I said, okay, what is that? And he said, I said, okay, all right. He was a golfer. He ran in college. He swam in college and, you know, he was very athletic. He said, that's what he's going to do now. And Jim, if you had told me that's what he was going to do then, when I was looking at him standing against the wall, I thought, oh, I just hardly could believe it. But that's exactly what we did. So it also ripped off his right arm. It did a lot of damage to his right arm. So he was a right-handed golfer and he had to learn how to play golf left-handed. And so then this is what ensued then, Jim. I started calling around to find out, were there any organizations that would allow an injured law enforcement officer to participate? Because obviously he wasn't born this way. He couldn't do Special Olympics. I tried the Paralympics, but they said that he wasn't injured enough because, you know, it has to be like an amputee. You know, they want to be able to see the injury. And my husband looks okay, but he's not. Okay, he's not. So you can't always see brain injury. It doesn't mean anything if you can't see the injury. So, and then I got him to Georgia once for a swim clinic and it was with a, I arrived and they said, well, we only have two groups here. It's children and he can't swim with the kids and it's veterans and he can't swim with the veterans because he's not a veteran. And I was standing there in Georgia, like 6 hours away from home. And they're like, but we'll let him swim today, but he cannot come back. It was actually with that group of veterans. I realized something. I want to say a shout out to all the veterans in the country. My love for you. Veterans have figured out that they embrace people. They embrace their injured. And they actually, after that event, when they said there's nowhere else in the country for you to swim, that night I was at the hotel. I was up all night just lamenting and thinking, well, this cannot be. But I started a nonprofit called Operation Homeland Honor, and we do adaptive sports. But back to the organization that did help, I finally found a veterans group and it was led by John Warden. And he took us in and he adopted us in. And I do not know where we'd be today without John Warden and that group of people. It was an adaptive cycling. And we went across the country for years. And what they did was they went from like point A to point B across a state and they cycled during the day. And for people who could not make it on their own, Umberto doesn't have balance, but he has a recumbent bike. They put push bars on the back and they pushed them. And I drove support. And on those rides, I would sit there and watch this group of veterans taking care of my husband. And it just encouraged my heart so much because he couldn't do it alone. And once we were in California and all the pushers had gotten exhausted and my husband and I were still at the bottom of the hill, this big mountain in California. I think it was Sir, if that means anything. And here we are at the bottom of the hill. And we can't get up. And I bent down. If you ever see my Facebook page, it says never give up. And I'm talking to him, don't give up. And John Warden came down the mountain and pushed him up single-handedly all the way up the mountain. So it was a group of veterans that actually helped us so much in the beginning. And now we do have some grassroots efforts that are now including first responders, thank God, you know, which we need. Because what we know, and veterans already knew this way before, you know, I had to find out, is that adaptive sports is so therapeutic and it helps people rebuild. And I've heard that even when veterans come in and they're injured, they have people designated that meet them and then get them into adaptive sports. In fact, I think that's where the Paralympics started, if I'm not mistaken. It was with a group of veterans. But nevertheless, I think adaptive sports is a fantastic place to start. And also you get to rebuild your community, because when you're injured, you lose your sense of self, you lose your community. And that then you've rebuilt a new group of people that you can walk in with these people. And it doesn't matter how you are. I don't have to explain how he is. I don't have to explain behaviors. We walk in and we're okay. And I think that's what everybody needs. So adaptive sports, I would say, is the number one rehabilitation that has been so helpful to us. And the Challenged Athletes Foundation has an Operation Rebound program that includes veterans and first responders. I'll say that for any first responders out there, if you're injured, the Challenged Athletes Foundation, Operation Rebound. And Nico Marcolongo is a fantastic human and have really helped us rebuild.
That's great. So backtracking a little bit, once Umberto is at the hospital, any kind of therapy there, any kind of rehabilitation at his hospital, say?
They didn't give him any rehabilitation. He wasn't approved for rehabilitation from workers' comp. So he didn't get rehabilitation. Had he gotten rehabilitation, he may not be exactly where he is today. It was about, he was only in the hospital the first time, maybe 2.5, 3 days. And they were just trying to get him out as fast as possible. And I'm like, what in the world? And I actually had to fight workers' comp for a whole year. They did do neuropsych testing, which showed he was extremely injured. Let me just put it that way. And then they wouldn't let us come back and see the results. And I had to say, wait a minute, I want to see the results. What's going on? And I finally got in to see the results, you know. So it's a really, workers' compensation is not the right system to be in if you have a traumatic brain injury, because we need these, they need to get help right away. You can't wait years. And even now, you know, it took me 2 years to get a pair of glasses for him. He has double vision. His eyes don't team. And it took me 2 entire years to get a pair of glasses for him to be able to see. And that's a long time. And that's me fighting on a daily basis. Now, if you can imagine, we have officers across the country, and I know one right now that I'm doing some work with, who is a single parent. I do not know how officers with brain injury can advocate for themselves. They simply cannot do it effectively. And we also need to have legal services for them, someone that's willing to really help them that understands this. And it's really hard. Fortunately, our second attorney was fantastic and stuck with us, and we still have them today, because today I still have to fight for his care. Okay. For example, you know, just taking him to his appointments, we haven't received any mileage for 6 months. So it's like, what it does is it throws the family into absolute financial crisis. The checks don't come on time. You never know. Every time a holiday comes by, I have no clue if any kind of payment's coming in. It throws you completely into financial crisis, and you have no, it can be help. You can feel absolutely hopeless, which is the reason why I wanted to do hope research, because if we can just give people even a spark of hope, it makes a huge difference. But I think there needs a lot needs to be done within these systems. And as far as rehabilitation, it's, you know, what has helped him now, he does have life coaching ongoing. I did fight for 5 years, and some things were court mandated. And part of that was life coaching. So he does do that. And he gets several hours a week. And as far as that, that's out in the community. And I think that's really important, because I think they deserve to have a life with us, okay, and not be so isolated. Brain injury is very isolating, and it's so difficult. So, you know, some kind of supports rehabilitation where they're out in the communities. There's a great organization in North Carolina called Neuro Community Care. And I think actually they serve people across the country. So it's called Neuro Community Care, and they're fantastic. And that's where he gets his life coaching. So if I could say, it really didn't happen in the hospital at all. In fact, it was very delayed. But, you know, I just want to say, if anybody's going through this now, because I personally know there are people going through this and across the country, don't give up hope and keep fighting. And, you know, if I can do anything, contact me through CBIRT, and I can see what I can point you to. But the most important thing for family members and those that are injured is just don't give up. And also, let me say something about these kids in these homes. I know how difficult it is for the children in the homes, and their lives are turned upside down too. As I said, my daughter and I were lamenting over it this morning. We're getting ready to do a presentation with CBIRT in December on this issue. And I imagine she and I will, we might cry a lot on that webinar, but I think it's important for people to see and understand what actually goes on. The entire family, when a law enforcement officer is catastrophically injured in this country, the entire family needs support to make it through this. We are losing not only our injured officers, but we're losing their caregivers, and we're losing their children to suicide. And with brain injury, we know research is out there that shows that if you have a brain injury, it increases your suicidal ideation, not only among the person who has brain injury, and this is not just for law enforcement, but not only for the person with brain injury, but it crosses over into their family units. And if we know that, then when someone gets a TBI concussion, then we could put supports into place immediately. But the supports need to be in place not only for the injured person, it has to be for the family. And as much as our officers protect us here at home every single day, they're putting their lives on the line, we can do that. I believe that we in this country can do better. And I think that there are people across the country that would be willing to do that when they hear that help is needed.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so you have the physical injury on top of the brain injury, and then trying to get them back to close to what they used to be. Some of your research is focused on caregivers and support and training for caregivers. Tell us a little bit about that.
Absolutely. Because what happens if they don't have a caregiver? I mean, you know, the fact is a lot of times after our injuries, after brain injury, the family unit becomes the caregiver, right? And it takes more than one family member to do this, but some people are doing this solely on their own. And right now we're empty nesters, so I'm more on my own nowadays. Caregivers, it's so hard. So it's important that we support caregivers. We can do that through support groups. We can do that through education. We can do that by increasing their ability to take care of people with brain injury. My research showed that if we can increase their knowledge about brain injury and then their self-efficacy, you know, help them feel like they can care for someone with a brain injury, then it also increases their hope. So hope is so important. So educating caregivers, how can you do this? That you can do this. And then also caregivers also need to have a really robust self-care program. And I have developed some programs for self-care for caregivers. I have several books on Amazon too that are out there that I've developed several models about. I don't think people really understand what happens after brain injury. And so I've developed some models out there so that you could actually just look at those. They're very simple, very short, that people could get an idea about what happens. And then I think also just increasing our supports and interventions for caregivers is important. Now, with law enforcement caregivers, I'm the first one in the country to do this as far as I know. And so collecting this data from these research studies will actually provide the data that we need to say this is what, you know, this is the intervention they need. This is the services they need. And then we need to put those into place.
Yeah, that's great. So we will put those links in our show notes so people can check those out. So what can we do more to support our families and the families of our law enforcement officers in situations similar to yours?
Right. If I were talking to departments, I would say continue to communicate with your injured. And I think what happens is over a period of time, people may think, oh, I haven't talked to them in weeks, or I haven't talked to them in months, or I haven't talked to them in a year, and now I don't know how to talk to them. And I would say, just call them up on the phone or stop by their house. Not necessarily ask what they need. Take them something. No doubt they're going to need something. Take them food. Do something. Invite them to events that you're having. Let them know that you still think about them. Make sure that they know that they weren't forgotten. The number one thing that I hear from injured officers across the country is that they were, a lot of them will say this exactly, they were thrown in the ditch. I would be better off if I had died. My family would be better off if I had died. So if we can change that by connecting with them, either by phone, I don't care how we do it, some way, make connections, reconnections back to departments or other groups of law enforcement groups, like these nonprofits, support groups, whatever it is, gather them back in. As far as organizations, if you have services that you can provide for our injured law enforcement officers, then let them know. I have to tell you, after injury, these officers are not going to have a ton of money to be able to pay for care. It's going to take them years to get care through the workers' compensation system they're in. So if you're in a position to provide any type of care for these officers and their families, then I would suggest volunteer to do that. Also, if anybody wants to help with the research, donating money toward the research, there is a nonprofit that Siebert is associated with, that if you donate to the nonprofit, you also get a tax write-off. So you would get something for donating, and you're going to actually be changing the lives of these officers. So if anybody wanted to donate to that nonprofit, they could contact me through this Center on Brain Injury Research and Training. Also, you know what? I think we just need to know that when an officer lives in this country, do not assume that they're getting everything that they need or that they're automatically going to be okay. Many times we raise money for the injured, the families that have lost the officer, and we should, but we don't raise funds for the officers that live. And let me just tell you, it is the hardest thing I've ever done in my entire life is to live through this experience. And you are, it's hard. You're not financially secure again. I have been fighting for this. You know, I'm 14 years out, still trying to figure this out to be able to make sure that my family's okay. Remember that the catastrophically injured officer has to keep living. And it's really important that we help them do that. And then providing the supports for the families in any way, you know, if you can impact one person, it makes a difference.
Sure. So you talk about the connections, maybe with old friends, about keeping them involved, and then the physical accomplishments. And you talked about that your husband, Humberto Reyna, the North Carolina State Trooper, after the injury, didn't want to be touched, felt isolated, wouldn't let you touch him. And then what happened?
Well, you know, right. After the adaptive sports, I say this, you know, after about 4 days of that first cycling event, we were walking down the hallway of the hotel and he put his arm around my shoulder. I couldn't believe it. There was something so therapeutic about that one adaptive sports event. It was unbelievable. Now, let me just tell you that Humberto was not in good shape then at all. I asked the leaders of that cycling group later. I said, what did you think when you first met him? And they said that he scared them to death because he was so injured. I'm telling you, he was so injured and so far gone. But they let me bring him back over and over and over and over. And that's what it takes. It takes somebody working with you for years, over and over and over. One event is fantastic, but that's not the answer. The answer is ongoing services for them for the rest of their lives. And I've watched him improve. Last year, now he still has all of these cognitive deficits. Let me say this. It is still hard to get through the day. Sometimes I'm like, it's only 6 a.m. and I've already had this crisis. It is not easy, but nevertheless, it doesn't mean that it's not worth it. It is still worth it. And it's more worth it when you get them there and you actually see some spark of them come back, right? So just having these services is what's so important to keep them going.
Yeah. Well, kudos to you. And you're a hero as well as Humberto for the service that he did. You're doing great research. It's going to help us all. Thank you so much for being on the show, Dr. Kay Reyna, traumatic brain injury researcher and caregiver. Thanks so much for what you've done.
Thank you for having me. And again, to anybody out there, if you're listening and you're struggling with this brain injury, whether it's law enforcement or not, I want you to keep fighting and keep pressing on because it's not over yet. If you live through this, then you can rebuild your life. And so we're here at the Center on Brain Injury Research and Training to help you do that. And so get in touch with us and let us see what we can do for you. And thank you for having me, Jim.
Oh, my pleasure. And to our listeners, I hope you enjoyed listening to Dr. Kay Reyna, and you can check out her articles and books and her bio on our show notes. So check it out and let me know what you're thinking. Drop me a line at policingmatters@policeone.com. And hey, stay safe out there, be careful, and hope to talk to you again real soon. Take good care.